Every time I even thought about pulling out a piece of paper to try, all I could imagine was filling that empty white space with all the words I could never ever say. Silence was safer. I'd ended the call soon after, telling him I'd let my mom know he'd phoned. When she walked in 10 minutes later and I passed along the message, she went ballistic. "You didn't wait until he was told to hang up?" she demanded, dropping one of her cloth shopping bags with a clunk on the island. "You just hung up on him?" "No," I said. "I said goodbye. We both did."
"But he could have talked longer. No one was stopping him."
I suddenly felt like I might start crying.
I'm sorry.
My mom bit her lip, then looked at me for a long moment. Finally, she sighed, reaching out to put both her hands on my shoulders.
"Sydney, I cannot emphasize enough how important it is for your brother to have contact with the outside world. Even if you only talk about the weather or what you ate for lunch, just talk. Keep him talking until his time on the phone is up. It's critical. Do you understand me?"
I nodded, not sure I could speak without sobbing. When she turned around to unload the groceries, I had to take several deep breaths before I was calm enough to help her. The second time I'd talked to Peyton was when I came home from having coffee with Jen and found Ames on the phone with him.
"Your gorgeous sister just walked in," he said into the receiver, then waved me over with his free hand.
"Yep. Oh, don't worry, I'm keeping the boys away from her. They'd better think twice before they come around our girl."
I felt my face get hot, the way it always did when he said stuff like this. Oblivious, he grinned at me, pulling out the chair right beside him.
"Yeah, she's right here. I'll put her on."
"Uh-huh.
Be there in a few days with vending machine money in hand."
"Right. Here she is."
He handed the phone out to me, and I took it. The mouthpiece was hot from his breath. I tried to hold it away from my own lips as I said, "Hey, Peyton."
"Hey," he said. "How's it going?"
"Okay." I looked at Ames, who was watching me. "Did you, get to talk to Mom yet?"
"Yeah," she answered when I called.
"Oh, right," I said. "Well..." A loud tone sounded on the line, followed by a recording announcing that the call would terminate in 30 seconds.
"I'd better go," my brother said. "Tell Mom I love her, okay?"
"Sure," I said.
"Bye, Sydney."
I didn't reply, and then the line went dead. Still, I sat there a second, letting the dial tone fill my ear before I hit the end button. "Time's up."
"Always comes too quickly," Ames said.
He smiled at me.
"He sounds good, right?"
I nodded. Although, to me, he hadn't really sounded like anything. Not even Peyton. But that was the phone. Family day would be face to face. Now, in the kitchen, I sat down, picking up my fork while Mom slid into a seat across from me. I'd been starving since I smelled the bacon cooking, but now the last thing I wanted to do was eat.
"Is Dad going to this thing?"
"If he's in town," she said, taking a tiny nibble of her toast, then chasing it with coffee.
"Otherwise, it'll just be you, me, and Ames."
I put my fork back down.
"I don't know," I said. "I'm worried I might freak out or something."
She looked at me.
"Freak out?"
I shrugged. "It's just kind of scary."
"It is," she agreed.
She took another sip. When she spoke again, her voice had a hard edge to it. It's very scary. Especially for your brother, who is locked away alone, with no support system other than us, his family.
Mom, I said.
If he can deal with that for 17 months, she continued, I think you can handle being slightly uncomfortable for a couple of hours. Don't you agree?
Yes, I said softly.
She was still glaring at me, so I repeated it more loudly this time. Yes. That was the last we spoke of it. By the time I left 10 minutes later, she was back to normal, checking that I had lunch money and waving to me from the front window as I pulled out of the driveway. As far as she was concerned, the matter was handled. I, however, was still shaken. At school, I cut the engine and just sat in my car, watching everyone else head to homeroom until the bell rang and I had no choice but to join them. Jen called as I was walking to lunch, as had become our routine. She and Meredith would put me on speakerphone, so it was kind of like I was there as they caught me up on what was going on at Perkins. There was something soothing about their voices that balanced out the constant cacophony of Jackson. Today, though, it was Jen who heard something. "Are you okay?" she asked me after Meredith caught me up on the meet she'd had that weekend.
"Yeah, why?"
"You just don't sound like yourself," she said. "Everything all right?"
"Yeah," I said. I had a flash of that flyer on the table. "It's just really noisy here, like always."
As if to punctuate this point, there was a burst of laughter just behind me.
"Good Lord," Meredith said. "How do you even concentrate?"
"I'm just walking to lunch," I told her. "It's not that mentally challenging." They were both quiet for a moment. Now I was turning on everyone.
"Sorry," I said. "Look, let me call you guys back in a bit, okay? I'll just get somewhere quiet."
"Okay," Jen replied. "Talk to you later." Meredith didn't say anything. She was incredibly physically tough, but always the first to get flustered at raised voices or confrontation.
"Bye, Mare," I said, trying.
"Bye," she replied. But now it was she who was clearly not okay. Before I could speak again, though, they were gone. I sighed as I stepped out into the courtyard. As I walked to the food trucks, I glanced over at the grassy spot where Layla ate, but the benches there were empty. I got a grilled cheese and a drink, then sat down on the wall, dropping my bag at my feet. Then I did something I hadn't allowed myself to do in weeks. I pulled out my phone, opened the browser, and typed in two words. David Ibarra. There was a time I'd done this almost daily. I'd spent hours following the internet presence of this boy I'd never met. I'd learned that his nickname was Brother, because according to one of the many articles after the accident, he treated everyone like family. His name popped up on several video game forums, so I knew he was really good at Warworld. The sports archive of the local paper had all his rec soccer stats, strong on defense, not so much on scoring. And while his UMe.com profile was private, there was an open page dedicated to him called Friends of Brother, which appeared to be maintained by his sister. That was where I'd gotten most of the info on his recovery and various fundraisers to help with his medical bills. It was also a source for page after page of comments from his friends and family. "So proud of you for your continuing strength and courage. We love you. Won't be able to make the spaghetti dinner, but we're sending a contribution. You're our hero, brother. Sending good wishes from here in the Lone Star State. Can't wait to see you at the reunion. Stay strong." So many times I'd imagined leaving a comment of my own, although I knew I never could. My last name was the last thing they wanted on that page, even with an apology following it. But that didn't stop me from crafting what I'd write. Sometimes, on really bad days, I'd go so far as to imagine myself going to him in person and saying everything I carried so heavily in my heart. Would he listen and maybe somehow understand? In the next beat, though, it would hit me like a slap, how pathetic I was for even thinking this. Like there was anything I could say that would give him that night and his legs back. The hardest thing, though, was the summary of the YouMe.com page posted at the very top. I could wade through 100 comments of love and good wishes. These few sentences, though, hit me like a punch to the gut every single time. In February 2014, David Ibarra was hit by a drunk driver while riding his bike home from his cousin's house, leaving him partially paralyzed. This page is dedicated to his story. Please leave a comment, and thank you for your support. Now on the wall I read these familiar words once, then twice, like it was some sort of mantra, a spell to cancel out what had happened that morning with my mom. I'd always remember the truth. Just to be sure, though, I made a point of bringing it front and center, right there before my eyes. There had been no shortage of bad moments in those early weeks after Peyton's accident. But one had really stuck with me. It was a passing remark I'd overheard as I came down the stairs one day. My parents were in the kitchen. What was a 15-year-old doing out riding his bike at 2 in the morning anyway? Silence. Then my dad. Julie. I know. But I just wonder. I just wonder. That was the moment I realized my mom would never be able to really hold Peyton responsible for what he'd done. Their bond was too tight, too tangled for her to see reason. Like anyone deserved to be hit by a car and paralyzed, like he was asking for it. For days afterward, I had trouble even looking at her. In February 2014, David Ibarra was hit by a drunk driver while riding his bike home from his cousin's house, leaving him partially paralyzed. This page is dedicated to his story. Please leave a comment, and thank you for your support. I just wonder. Hey! As I looked up, startled, I had this fleeting thought that I would see David Ibarra in front of me. But it was Layla. When she saw my face, her eyes widened. What's wrong? I swallowed, hard, and then, somehow, I was talking. My brother's in prison for drunk driving. He left a kid paralyzed, and I hate him for it. As I spoke, I realized I'd held these words in for so long and so tightly that I felt the space they left empty once released. It was vast enough that I could think of nothing to follow them. Layla looked at me for a long moment. Then she sat down beside me and said, "So there's this thing about me." I don't know what reply I'd been expecting from her, but it wasn't this. I said, "I'm sorry?" I never forget a face. Like, never. I wish I could sometimes. She swallowed, then turned to look at me. "I saw you in the courthouse. A few weeks back, you were coming out of the bathroom." Until that moment, I had totally forgotten everything about that day, except Peyton being sentenced. But as she said this, the rest of the details came rushing back. Ames taking me to the bathroom and waiting outside, washing my hands, dreading rejoining him, and a girl who met my eyes and didn't look away. "That was you?" She nodded. "I'd forgotten." "I know. Anyone else would have. But I recognized you the minute I saw you at Seaside." "You didn't say anything." "Because it tends to creep people out," she sighed. "I mean, for everyone else, you see a stranger and then forget them. Faces only stick for a reason. But with me, it's like a photograph, filed away in my mind."
"That's nuts," I said.
"I know. Mac always says I should join the circus or run a scheme or something, so I'm at least putting my power to use." We were quiet another moment. Finally, I said, "Why were you there?"
"At the courthouse?"
I nodded. "I was with Rosie. She's had to check in with the judge about her progress every couple of months since she got busted." I had a flash of the crack her sister had made about Logan Oxford and Layla's equally snide reply.
"Was it drugs?"
"Yep." She sat back, turning up her face to the sun. "After her knee injury, she got a bit too fond of the Vicodin they gave her. Tried to pass off some fake prescriptions. Totally moronic. Got arrested, like, instantly."
"Did she go to jail?"
Layla shook her head. "Rehab. Then they put an anklet on her. She just got it off a couple of weeks ago."
"Really?"
"Yeah. You think she's grumpy now? Imagine her stuck in the house for 6 months." She sighed. "It's her own stupid fault, though. So infuriating. She had everything going for her and just blew it."
"That's like my brother."
It was new to be talking to someone I didn't know well about this, but easier than I would have thought. He had so many chances, but he kept getting into trouble anyway. And then the accident. I trailed off, not sure how much further I wanted to go into this. Layla didn't say anything. In the silence, I realized I did want to keep talking. Really badly, actually. He'd been sober for over a year, doing really well. And then one night, for no reason that we can figure out, he got drunk and behind the wheel, hit a kid riding his bike. The kid is in a wheelchair now, forever. Layla winced.
"Wow. That's awful."
It was. It was really, really awful. And not just for Peyton, my mom and dad, or even me. "His name is David Ibarra." I looked down at my hands. "I think about him all the time."
"Of course you do."
She said this, simply, flatly. "Anyone would. It's like you with the faces. I can't stop." I took in a breath. "And my mom? It's like she can't see what Peyton did for what it is. She just worries about him and how he's doing. And my dad doesn't talk about anything, and now she wants me to visit him. And I don't want to. At all. We got in a fight about it this morning." Saying this, I realized one reason I'd never spoken to Jen or Meredith this way. Layla might have known my face, but she was still a blank slate when it came to Peyton, not already in possession of some bias or feeling toward him, unlike everyone else in my world. "If you don't want to go, you shouldn't," she said. "Just tell your mom you're not in that place yet." "I don't know if I ever will be. I mean, I've always loved my brother," I said. "But I really hate him right now." Across the courtyard, someone laughed. Two girls in field hockey uniforms passed by, one on the phone, the other opening a piece of gum. Happy, normal lives going on in happy, normal ways. In a world that was anything but. Once you realize this, experienced something that made it crystal clear, you couldn't forget it, like a face or a name. However you first learn that truth, once it's with you, it never really goes away. Chapter 6. For the first couple of days after I told Layla about Peyton, I kept waiting to regret it. It was strange, telling the story from the beginning, instead of catching someone up on only the latest awful chapter. Like finally I was in a place quiet and safe enough to hear it too. Just the facts laid out like cards on a table. This happened, then this. The end. Even so, I thought it would change everything. This wasn't unrealistic. Peyton's crimes and convictions had skewed the view people had of my entire family. People in the neighborhood either stared or made a point of not looking at us. Conversations at the pool or by the community bulletin board stopped when we came into earshot. It was like stepping into a funhouse hall of mirrors, only to find you had to stay there. I was the sister of the neighborhood delinquent, drug addict, and now drunk driver. It didn't matter that I'd done none of these things. With shame, like horseshoes, proximity counts. But not, apparently, with Layla. Instead of keeping me at arm's length, she looped me more tightly into her world, which I soon learned was jam-packed as it was. If I was the invisible girl, Layla was the shining star around which her family and friends revolved. We didn't form a friendship as much as I got sucked into her orbit. And once there, I understood why everyone else was. "Everyone, this is Sydney," she'd announced the day after our talk, when I finally gathered up the courage to accept her invitation to join her and her friends at lunch. "She transferred from Perkins Day, drives a sweet car, and likes root beer yum-yums." I blinked, startled at being summarized in this fashion. But it was better than any of the other labels I could think of, so I took a seat on one of the three benches I now knew they staked out each day. Mac was on another, eating from a plastic Ziploc bag full of grapes, while Eric, wearing a fedora, strummed his guitar facing the courtyard. "We've already met, remember?" Mac said. "She's met you guys," she responded, "but not Irv." "Who's Irv?" I asked. Just then a shadow came over me. Not a metaphorical or symbolic one, but a real, actual shadow, as in something large had blocked out the sun. I went from squinting to sitting in shade in a matter of seconds. I looked behind me, expecting to see, what? A sudden skyscraper? A wall? Instead, it was the human equivalent, the biggest, broadest, thickest black guy I had ever seen. He was wearing dress pants, a shirt and tie, with a Jackson High football jersey over it, and sunglasses. As I stared at him, he held out a huge hand.
"Irving Farrington," he said. "Pleasure to meet you."
My hand looked like a toy wrapped in his. I had the fleeting thought that he could rip my entire arm out of my socket and eat it, and I would not be surprised. Somehow, despite this, I managed to say, "Hi."
"What you got for lunch today, Irv?" Layla said, as he lowered his huge girth onto the last open bench. "Anything good?"
"Dunno yet."
He unzipped his backpack. God, his wrists were thicker than my legs! And pulled out a large insulated cooler. As he opened it, I saw it was packed with plastic bags, which he began unloading. One had what looked like chicken legs, another some kind of grain. On and on, they kept coming. Edamame, a stack of hamburger patties, hard-boiled eggs, and finally, at the very end, there was a bag packed with cookies.
"Score!"
Layla said, seeing this. Irv grinned, suddenly looking much less intimidating, like he might pull out your arm, but not eat it.
Toss those over.
I don't think so.
He waved a huge finger at her.
You know the rules. Protein first.
Irving, for God's sake, I already have one diet nag in my life.
I didn't say a word,
Max said, eating another grape.
Protein,
Irv repeated, waving his hand at his substantial meal.
Your choice.
Fine.
Give me a couple of eggs. He handed over the bag and she opened it, taking out two, then passed it back. Irving held it to me.
Egg? Whites are the perfect protein.
No thanks, I said, holding up the grilled cheese I'd gotten. I'm good.
Lucky you, Layla grumbled, peeling an egg. If I showed up with one of those, these two would never let me hear the end of it.
But you wouldn't show up with that, Max said. You'd just get fries and call it lunch. And fries aren't a meal.
Fine, Grandma. Just shut up and eat your grapes, would you?
In response, he threw one at her. It went wide, though, and hit me square in the face. As it bounced off, rolling into the grass, I saw his eyes widen, horrified.
Nice, Macaulay Chatham, his sister said. Is that part of your game now, throwing food at pretty girls to get their attention?
I was pretty now? And then we were both blushing.
I wasn't aiming at her, he said, clearly embarrassed.
To me, he said,
sorry.
It's fine, I said.
Although I can see that as the beginning to a great love story, Layla said.
Here we go,
Irv groaned, eating half a hamburger patty in one bite. This Layla ignored, pulling a knee up to her chest.
Seriously, can't you just see it? He threw a grape at me on a sunny day, and I just knew it was love.
That, Max said, spitting out a seed,
is the stupidest one yet. Which is really saying something,
Irv added. She made a face, wrinkling her nose, then said to me,
these boys have no sense of romance. I, on the other hand, am a connoisseur.
You call yourself a connoisseur of everything, her brother pointed out.
Not everything. Just candy, french fries, and love.
She smiled at me.
All the important stuff. Seriously, though, I know the start to a good love story when I hear it. I should. I've read hundreds of them.
I raised my eyebrows.
Really?
On his bench, Max sighed audibly.
Oh, yeah. It's like my thing.
She peeled the second egg. Romance and instruction manuals.
But not romance instruction manuals.
Eric, who I hadn't even thought was listening, added.
Seriously, though, Layla continued, I love reading about how to do things, even if it's something that, like, I will never do in a million years, like weave a rug or grout a floor.
Wow, I said.
I know. I'm like a process addict or something.
She ate the egg, chewing thoughtfully, then swallowed and added,
or, you know, a connoisseur.
Truth. I was having trouble keeping up. Not just with this conversation, but the people actually having it. I'd spent so much time alone lately that I'd forgotten what it was like to be relaxed in another person's company. I liked it. After that first lunch, I began eating with them every day. Once the bell rang, I'd get something to eat from the food trucks, then cross the grass to either join whoever was already there or stake out the benches until they arrived. Food-wise, every day it was the same. Mac and Irving brought their lunches. Eric was partial to a fruit punch and buttery grilled cheese from the cafeteria. And Layla looked for fries. She hadn't been kidding about the connoisseur thing. This girl took her frites seriously. It wasn't enough for them to be potatoes and fried. All that most people, myself included, really cared about. Oh, no. There were specifications, required seasonings, rules about everything, from temperature and packaging to whether the ketchup was from a packet or a bottle. This last one had sub-rules and addendums as well. Going to look for fries with Layla was like tagging along with my mom while she perused office supplies, requiring both patience and a substantial time commitment. By the time Layla got what she wanted, I was often finished with my entire lunch, if not already hungry again. "What's most important is the shape," she explained to me the first time I joined her on this quest. "They should be long, not stubby. Decent width, but not thicker than a finger. Only the most basic seasoning, nothing crazy, and served hot." "But not too hot?" I asked as she leaned into the window of the double burger truck and sniffed. "No such thing," she replied. "Hot fries cool down. Cold fries never warm up. Let's keep walking. I'm not liking the grease smell here today." The guy behind the counter just looked at her as she turned, continuing on. I gave him an apologetic shrug and followed. "What about fast food ones?" I asked. "They're pretty much all the same, right?" She stopped dead in her tracks. I almost crashed into her. "Sydney," she said, turning to face me, "that is not true. The next time I do a trifecta, you're coming. I'll show you how wrong you are." "A trifecta?" "That's when I get fries from the big three," she explained. She held up her fingers, counting off. "Littles, Bradbury Burger, and Pamlico Grill. None of them are perfect. But if you mix them together, it's like the paradise of fries. It's time-consuming, so I only do it on special occasions, or when I'm super depressed." Hearing this, I had that feeling again, like the conversation was a pack of wild horses pounding out ahead of me, leaving nothing but dust behind. Trifecta? Depression? Grease smell? She was already talking again. "These trucks aren't the best for fries because mobile fryers just taste different from ones in brick-and-mortar stores. But they do have some cool flavors you can't get in the traditional places. There's one place that I really like." "Oh, they're here today! Come on!" In my pocket, I felt my phone buzz. I pulled it out and glanced at the screen. "Jen," it said, with a picture of her from her last birthday party, a cheap plastic tiara on her head. I reached for the ignore button, feeling a pang of guilt, but not enough to not press it. I'd call her later. Layla, meanwhile, had walked up to a truck I'd never tried before called Bim Bim Slims, which sold some kind of Asian Creole fusion. The smells coming from it were like nothing I'd ever experienced before. She didn't even glance at the menu. "Regular bim fry," she told the guy. "Actually, make it two orders. No sauce. Just extra ketchup packets."
"You got it."
Moments later, he handed over a white bag that smelled heavenly and was already sprouting grease stains. Layla smiled, satisfied. "Perfect. Come on." Back at the benches, she nudged Eric off his seat. "Move! I need to set up." Then sat down, opening the bag and putting her face over the opening. As we all watched, she took a deep breath, eyes closed, then silence. "Are we waiting for something?" I whispered to Irv, who was gnawing on a turkey leg. "The verdict," he replied, voice equally low. Finally, Layla opened her eyes. "Okay, these will do." What followed was an intricate multi-step process that began with the flattening and placement of the bag to turn it into a proper eating surface and ended with three identically sized pools of ketchup, each on its own napkin. To one she added pepper, the next salt, and the third, some unidentified substance she pulled from her purse, housed in a test tube.
"I know just what you're thinking," Irv said to me. "This has all been a little intense, but now it's getting weird. I felt the same way my first time."
"That's because it is weird to carry your own personalized spice blend around," Max said, his eyes still on his history textbook.
He was always studying at lunch, I'd noticed, but still listening to everything as well. Layla ignored them, picking up a fry and dipping an end in one of the ketchups. She took a bite, chewing thoughtfully, then repeated the process with the other two options. When the fry was gone, she wiped her fingers on a napkin, then looked at me.
"Okay, try one."
Me? I had assumed this was an individual sport. She nodded, gesturing for me to come over. I did, taking a seat next to one of the ketchup stations, and she pushed the bag/plate toward me. "Take one from the middle. Those are the best. I always eat from the inside out." I did as I was told, selecting a thick but not overly so one. Then I realized that although I'd been eating fries since before I could talk, this was the first time I'd not been sure how to do it. This was made more awkward by the fact I had an audience. 1, 2, 3, Layla said, pointing at each of the ketchups. "Triple dunk, then eat half, flip it over, and repeat with the other side. That way you avoid the double dip."
"What's in the last one?" I asked, still hesitant.
"My own creation. Don't worry, it's not spicy or gross, I promise." In every friendship, at some point comes a test. Never before in my experience, however, had it involved food. First time for everything, I thought, and followed directions. I'm not sure what I'd been anticipating. A good fry? Some tangy sauce? It was not, however, the perfection that subsequently unfolded inside my mouth. Considering the intricacy of preparation, maybe this is what I should have been expecting. But the crispness of the outer shell, the mushy hot softness of the potato within, suddenly tinged with the sweetness of the ketchup mix, was a total surprise. Wow.
"See?" Layla said, smiling at me. "Great, right?"
"It's amazing," I said, already turning it over and prepping the next bite. She clapped her hands, clearly thrilled.
"I love a new convert to my process."
"Welcome to the illness," Max said.
"Oh, don't listen to him. He used to eat his weight in these things, and he was barbaric about it. Just dumped them out, covered them in ketchup, and dove in."
She shuddered. "Ugh." I glanced over at Mac, who was eating an apple. He saw me and rolled his eyes, and I quickly looked away. In the next beat, like always, I regretted this, but there was something about him that made me so nervous. From someone that good-looking, even the smallest bit of attention was like the brightest of lights focused on me. I knew this reaction well, because I'd seen it from the other side in girls when they were around my brother. He and Mac had the same dark, intense looks, that identical way of drawing attention just by existing. But while Peyton had long been aware of it, I had the feeling Mac wasn't. He didn't carry himself like he knew he was attractive. And sometimes, when he did catch me watching him, he seemed surprised. But I shouldn't have even been thinking like this, and not just because Mac would never be interested in me in the first place. I'd only been hanging out with Layla for a week or so, but certain rules, spoken and unsaid, were already clear. You weren't barbaric with fries, you didn't take the bubblegum or cotton candy yum-yums, and you never even thought about dating her brother. Just ask Kimmy Crandall. I'd first heard this name during a typical fast-paced lunch conversation. It began with a discussion about milk and how people either really liked it or really didn't. There was no in-between. Then it shifted to other things that people hated, which segued into a speed round during which Layla, Eric, and Irv tried to come up with the most awful combination ever.
Someone you truly dislike eating with their mouth open, Eric offered. And something gross, like egg salad.
What's wrong with egg salad?
Irv asked. Just play the game, Layla told him. Irv thought for a second.
Someone you truly dislike eating egg salad with their mouth open while wearing a sweater that smells like wet dog.
My turn. I said. Someone you truly dislike eating egg salad open-mouthed in a wet dog sweater while telling a boring story with no point. Nice, Layla said appreciatively. I hate that. You're up, Mac. Mac, who was continuing his run of various fruits at lunch with a handful of blackberries, said,
Everything you guys said plus golf.
Layla sighed. You're supposed to repeat the whole sentence. God, you never play right.
Then exclude me. I'll be fine, I promise, he said,
turning another page in his chem textbook.
Party pooper, Irv said.
Mac threw a blackberry at him, this time connecting.
Watch it, fatty.
Nice mouth,
Mac replied, but he hardly seemed bothered, not to mention fat. There was a lot I wasn't privy to yet, clearly. Layla sat up straight, holding up her hands.
Okay, this. Kimmy Crandall eating egg salad with her mouth full, wearing a sweater that smells like wet dog, while telling a boring story with no point about golf.
Sold! Eric said. You win!
Hands down, Irv agreed. Still the champion.
Mac turned to look across the courtyard, adding nothing to this. I said, Who's Kimmy Crandall? Silence. Then Layla said, Mac's ex-girlfriend, and my former best friend.
Oh,
that explained the quiet. Sorry.
Don't be. We're both much better off without her.
Mac got up then, balling his lunch stuff up and starting over to the trash cans. As he walked away, Irv said,
Still too soon?
It's been 3 months.
Layla sat back.
There has to be a statute of limitations on pretending someone doesn't exist.
Maybe it's different when that person was your girlfriend, Eric said.
She broke the friendship code. That means I can make fun of her whenever I want.
Turning to me, she said,
She totally started hanging out with me just to get to Mac. I was friendless and desperate and couldn't see. Then she hooked him in, stomped on his heart, and proceeded to talk smack about us to anyone who would listen.
That's awful, I said, looking at Mac. He was walking back toward us now, running a hand through his hair.
Does she go here?
She shook her head. The fountain school. She was a mean hippie. Whoever knew such a thing existed? Bitch. This was the harshest thing I'd ever heard her say, and it stunned me into silence for a second. Obviously, for all the nagging and fruit throwing, there was a loyalty there that ran deep. Once I was aware of it, I saw proof of it again and again. I couldn't really relate, as by the time Peyton got into dating, he was already slipping away from us. I could, however, take note, so I did. Two nights later, it was my mom who had something waiting by her plate. Instead of a flyer, it was a brochure. All I could see from my seat was a picture of a beach.
What's this? She said as she came in carrying a platter of roasted chicken.
She set it down but did not pick up the paper,
like it was not for her. She shouldn't even touch it.
Hotel St. Clair,
my father told her, reaching for the chicken. My dad was always hungry. He was a constant nibbler, known for standing in front of the fridge for long periods, grazing, and always jumped on food as soon as it arrived.
In the St. Ivy Islands.
Why is it by my plate?
Because,
my dad said, serving himself a large helping.
I have a conference there next week, and I want you to come with me.
Immediately, my mom's face said no. Or maybe no. The little crease appeared between her eyes that Peyton had in her earshot, once not so smartly referred to as Anger Canyon.
A trip? Now? Oh, I don't think so.
Give me one reason why.
She sighed, then sat down, pushing the folded paper aside to pick up her napkin. Next weekend is visitation at Lincoln.
Julie, you go often enough to miss one day.
He counts on me to be there, Peyton.
We'll make sure Ames visits then.
She shook her head. And Sydney just started a new school. It's just not a good idea. My dad looked at me. His expression made it clear I should say, I'm fine. So I did.
Honey, you can't just stay here by yourself,
she told me, sounding tired.
I already talked to Jen's parents. They'd love to have her.
I blinked, surprised. It was true I hadn't talked to Jen in a few days, but I was still surprised she hadn't mentioned anything about this. She might not, I realized, even know. When my dad wanted something, he went for it.
Julie, he said now, you need this. We need this. It's 2 days on a beautiful beach and everything's taken care of. Just say yes.
The no was still on her face. Even so, she said, I'll think about it. My dad didn't say anything, his expression measured as he felt out how hard to push the issue.
Okay, he said, do that.
And with that, the subject was dropped. But clearly not forgotten, as I heard them talking about it twice more that evening. Once as they watched the news while I very quietly loaded the dishwasher, and again from upstairs as I was getting ready for bed. The next morning as I passed the war room, I saw she'd pulled her file labeled Travel onto the desk. The one that contained packing lists, intricate clothes folding diagrams, and all her guidebooks. If they went, it would be her first trip in over a year, and I wanted her to have that. Plus, a whole weekend with Jen might help to bridge the distance that I'd recently felt creeping into our increasingly rare conversations, both on the phone and face-to-face. Maybe this would be good for all of us. But the morning they were supposed to leave, we got a phone call. Jen's sick, my mom reported when I came downstairs for school. My dad was leaning against the fridge with his coffee.
Stomach bug. They all have it.
Ugh, I said.
Exactly.
So you can't stay there this weekend.
She looked at my dad. What now?
Meredith?
She's away at a meet, I told them. Left yesterday. My mom sighed.
Well, that's that. Peyton, you go ahead and I'll stay here. It's probably better this way anyway.
No, no, hold on, my dad said. Let me think.
I'm 17, I told them. I can stay alone for a weekend.
That's not happening, my mom told me.
I think we all know well what a lack of supervision can lead to.
Hearing this, I felt stung. I'd never done anything, not even skipped school.
The last thing I deserved was to have the same old assumptions applied. But clearly, this wasn't about me.
Hold on,
my dad said, pulling out his phone and typing something as I got down a bowl and poured my cereal. I was just about to add milk when he said,
Done. It's taken care of.
I looked at him. Now I was an it. Nice. How? He replied to my mom, not me.
Ames and Marla. They'll be here at 4, stay the whole weekend. He says it's not a problem at all.
Oh, they don't need to do that, I said quickly. I'm fine. I mean, I'll be fine. Ames and Marla? My mom wrinkled her brow. Oh, I hate to impose on them that way. He's already going to Lincoln tomorrow.
He's happy to do it, he says, and Marla's got the whole weekend off.
Oh, great. I had heard Marla say a total of about 10 words in the months I'd known her. Having her here would be no different, really, than Ames and I alone. I said, I actually have this new friend, Layla. I'm sure I could stay with her. They both looked at me.
A new friend? You haven't mentioned that.
Well, I just met her, but I'm not sending you to stay with a family I don't know at all, Sydney, my mom said, shaking her head. That could even be worse than staying by yourself.
Then I'll just do that.
Ames and Marla are coming,
my dad said. His tone made it clear this negotiation was over.
Now, Sydney, eat your breakfast. You're going to be late.
Helpless, I sat down at the table as my dad walked over and kissed my mom on the forehead, then said something quietly to her that I couldn't hear. She smiled, reluctantly, and I realized how long it had been since I'd seen her anything but barely coping or outright sad. And what would I tell her, anyway? That this person whom you count on and totally adore gives me the creeps? For no reason I could specifically say? And his girlfriend wouldn't help matters? I'd sound crazy. Maybe I was. Sydney? She asked me suddenly. I looked up. Everything okay? I met her eyes, saying nothing but wishing she would. That somehow, in the midst of all her grief and distraction, she might be able to finally see me, if not hear the words I couldn't speak aloud. A beat passed, then another. She was starting to look worried, the canyon finding its way onto her face again. From the open doorway, my dad was watching me too. Yeah, I told them. I'm fine. Chapter 7. This time at Seaside, I was sure of it. The music playing was bluegrass. You want another slice? I shook my head. Layla slid out from the booth where we were sitting, taking her plate with her. As she ducked behind the counter, grabbing a second piece to heat up, I walked over to the jukebox. It was the vintage kind, with actual type titles, and a slot to put in coins. Each selection was a quarter. The song currently playing was called Rope Swing. We call that thing the dinosaur, Layla said from behind me. A moment later, she was leaning on the glass. My dad bought it at a flea market when he took over this place from my grandfather. So pizza runs in the family, I said. Not exactly. My mom's the Italian one. Daddy's family is from the mountains, she said. But when he married in, it was understood he'd take over Seaside eventually. He wanted to make it more his own, though, hence the dinosaur. That's when the music rule started. Music rule? Nothing but bluegrass during business hours. She shook her head. We have tried everything to talk reason into him.
I mean, this place is called Seaside Pizza. Bluegrass is mountain music. It's totally incongruous.
It's pretty, though, I said, as Rope Swing went into another chorus.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's the first thing I learned to play. It's just not exactly what teenagers want to listen to after school. And since we're always trying to get more business, it's kind of ridiculous.
You play music? She nodded, still looking at the song choices.
It's the only thing my dad's into other than cars and work. He taught me the banjo when I was 7.
You play banjo?
You say it like I said I do brain surgery or castrate elephants, she said and laughed.
It's just pretty impressive.
She shrugged. I like singing better, but Rosie's the one with the voice. With this, she turned on her heel, going back behind the counter. Mac was back there as well, working some dough in his hands, with one of his textbooks open on the counter in front of him, while his dad chopped peppers, facing the window. It was only my 3rd time or so after school at Seaside, but I'd already learned enough of the routine to feel comfortable there, which was why I'd made a point of coming today. I planned to stay as long as I possibly could. I'd gone to school at 7:45 that morning. At lunch, I checked my voicemail to find a message my mom had left as she and my dad drove to the airport an hour or so earlier. She told me their flight was on time, that she'd have her phone with her all weekend, and I should call if I needed anything at all. But I didn't know what I needed, only what I absolutely did not. To be stuck with Ames and silent shrinking Marla for the entire weekend. I'd had a pit in my stomach all day, trying to figure out how to be gone as long as possible. There was school, at least, and then I'd go meet Layla at Seaside, where she went every day after the final bell until deliveries started coming in and Matt could drop her at home. I could stay until at least 6 or so, getting home with only a couple hours left before I could reasonably go to bed. Saturday, I planned to slip out early and stay gone all day, using an excuse I hadn't formulated yet. That was as far as I'd gotten. I slid back into the booth opposite Layla, who was now digging into her 2nd slice. Unlike fries, her pizza she consumed in a somewhat normal way, folding it in half like a taco, and proceeding from tip to crust. For such a small, lithe person, she could eat a lot, I was noticing. In contrast, I'd never seen Max sample a single thing at Seaside, which had to require a huge amount of self-control. The only reason I'd turned down a 2nd slice was that dread was taking up much of my stomach. As I thought this, my phone beeped. I pulled it out of my purse. The text was from Ames, whose number my mom had insisted I add to my contacts before leaving for school that morning.
Just got here. What's your ETA? Cooking you dinner.
What's up? I looked up at Layla. She was dabbing her mouth with a napkin, half the slice already devoured.
Nothing. Just a text from... My parents are out of town.
So they're checking in?
Yeah.
She went back to eating, and I wondered why I didn't tell her what was going on. Nothing had surprised her so far. This probably wouldn't either. But I liked Layla, and felt lucky that learning about Peyton hadn't changed how she felt about me. Adding on another layer of weirdness, though, might do just that.
An hour or so. I wrote back. You don't have to cook.
I hit send. In seconds, he'd replied.
I want to.
I stuffed my phone back in my bag, turning off the ringer. As I did, I felt a rush of new anger toward my brother. There had been so many ripple effects of his bad choices, but this one was mine alone to deal with. Thanks a lot. I swallowed, then looked over at the register. Mac was tossing the crust now, using both hands to shape and thin it. I watched him,
drawing something like comfort from the repetitive movements, and then he suddenly looked at me. For once, I stared back, if only for a second, before turning away. At 5:30, the phone started ringing.